Well, that's a familiar theme song now, isn't it? Yes, that's the familiar theme song that issues in the wonderful Michael Snyder, who's going to give us some movie reviews. How you doing, Michael?
I'm okay, Alex. I hope everybody out there in GabNet land is doing well. We've got April before us, and we're ready to rock with some new film reviews. So let's get going. We're going to lead off with The Drama. And The Drama almost felt to me like a sneak attack. I had a pre-screening vibe that I'd be reviewing a star-driven romantic comedy with Robert Pattinson and Zendaya. And yeah, there's a meet cute at the start where their characters, museum director Charlie and bookstore clerk Emma, encounter one another in a Boston cafe, but there's something kind of stalkerish about their meet. And it quickly becomes apparent, despite that they've fallen in love and they happily move in with one another. All this is quickly laid out at the top of the film. And we fast forward to a couple years later. They are on the verge of marriage until a bout of inebriated truth-telling with their best friends Rachel and Mike, played by rock musician Alana Haim and Mamadou Athi, leads to a revelation that throws the Charlie-Emma relationship and the impending marriage into crisis. You know, if this is a rom-com, it's a very unconventional, dark-hued one. Director and screenwriter Christopher Borgli has forged a smart, sharp movie about the tenuous nature of romance and, for that matter, the shaky bonds of friendship when one brief anecdote can upend what seem to be deep and unshakable connections. Ultimately, here the focus is on Charlie and Emma, and Pattinson and Zendaya do some of their best work. I mean, I will go further. This actually might be Zendaya's most impressive performance to date. There are, like, no punches pulled in The Drama, and despite its interest in romance, there is nary a hit of saccharin. I gotta warn you, though, there is a bit of strychnine here. You know, some people will find it uncomfortable to watch, and I, on the other hand, rolled with The Drama in all senses of the title. And by the way, the name might not be familiar, but Borgli is the maverick Norwegian filmmaker who made 2022's audacious Sick of Myself and the endlessly creative 2023 Nicolas Cage movie Dream Scenario. I think this guy is a force.
Yeah, we've all seen those movies.
If you haven't seen Dream Scenario with Nicolas Cage, you're missing out. It's Nicolas Cage. It's in English. It's not a Norwegian film. He's a Norwegian director.
When I saw when you first mentioned Nicolas Cage, I tuned out.
Well, that's your problem, not anybody else's. Anyway, this guy is talented. I thought The Drama was great. And it is in theaters right now. Okay, moving on to something I'm not so hot about. A sequel to the 2023 hit animated Nintendo video game adaptation, The Super Mario Brothers Movie. We now have The Super Mario Galaxy Movie. It's this convoluted adventure that takes the familiar characters, bantering brothers and plucky plumbers Mario and Luigi. Hey, they're a couple of Italian-American stereotypes from Brooklyn. And they're on a galactic quest along with the adorable ruler of the Mushroom Kingdom, Princess Peach, to save the universe where the brothers now live. I guess rents in Brooklyn really are obscenely high. I don't know. I don't know why you would stay there when you could live in Brooklyn, but again, the bratty son of the previously defeated despot, Bowser, is trying to outdo dad in the tyranny department, and he has kidnapped Peach's older sister, Princess Rosalina, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, Chris Pratt and Charlie Day are back to voice Mario and Luigi. It's me, Chris Pratt. Jack Black is back to blather as Bowser, and the slumming Anya Taylor-Joy returns to the role of Princess Peach, but the total effect is not so peachy. It's admittedly long on colorful visual dazzle, but it's chaotic, overstuffed, and short on establishing information about the characters. Matthew Fogel's script is clunky that way. And if you didn't see the first movie, and I did, and have no familiarity with the games, and I don't, it's going to be lacking in plot clarity, and all of the Easter eggs, and there are plenty, I'm sure, Will be soft boiled or scrambled. If you get my drift.
Wait a minute, you're not familiar. You're not familiar with Donkey Kong.
I was bringing up Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong from the previous movie. He's a major character in all these Mario video games. I guess he's not even a factor here. In the first film, he was voiced by Seth Rogen. Not that it matters. So new names jumping into the Super Mario voice acting game include Brie Larson as Princess Rosalina, Benny Safdie as Bowser Jr., Glenn Powell as Top Gun-style Starship pilot Fox McCloud from Nintendo's Star Fox series, and Donald Glover as some green dinosaur-like thing named Yoshi. But the totality of this was pretty meh, despite the eye candy and the nonstop action. It was co-directed by Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelinek for Universal's Illumination Studio, which makes all the Gru and Minions movies. So, of course, there had to be a Minions cameo. Not that it mattered or made it better. This is in theaters. Maybe the kids like it. Maybe the fanboys and gamers will get a kick out of it. But, you know, and I'll be straight up. I kind of enjoyed the first one. I tolerated it. It made sense. It told a story. It gave you, you know, the situation and made it clear. In this case, that's not happening. And that's even, again, somebody who saw the first film. All right. I got something I really liked, and it's set in New York. So this goes out to you, Alex. Fantasy Life is a more conventional romantic comedy than the drama. And in this case, a neurotic, youngish, Jewish New York schlub named Sam is canned from his job as a paralegal, and he becomes smitten with a neurotic actress when he ends up babysitting her three daughters at the behest of his psychotherapist's wife, who is, of course, the grandmother to the trio of girls. But complications are inevitable when you factor in the feelings of the children, their dad, and other family members. As the first feature film to be written and directed by comedic actor Matthew Shear, Fantasy Life serves up some kind of Woody Allen energy. Hey, you know, I guess Shear's like, what, Woody Allen Jr.? Anyway, you got the painfully anxious Sam, played by the filmmaker, in appropriately hapless mode. Although Shear is perfectly pathetic as the unmoored and recently unemployed Sam, the whole enterprise is truly enhanced by a bunch of superb veteran actors in the ensemble. And at the heart of all of this is a memorable and textured performance by Amanda Peet. We don't see enough of her. Here she plays the actress mother, Diane. It gives her something to sink her teeth into. Diane's career was put on hold by motherhood. She longs to return to the limelight, even as her husband, David, a smug musician, is frequently on the road. So David's touring schedule and Diane's depression over her aborted career lead this artsy, well-to-do New York family to hire the cash-poor Sam on a full-time basis as a nanny, or, you know, Manny, if you prefer, although he prefers au pair. And so he's there to take care of the trio of kids. And needy Sam, with his mental health issues, cannot help falling for Diane, who has issues of her own, and, of course, a husband. So what plays out is this very compelling clash of presumably educated and well-to-do individuals whose personal damage, idiosyncrasies, and eccentricities seem to be reason enough for their reliance on therapy and pharmaceuticals. You know, it's a funny film, but there's pain in the dollops of angst that Shear dishes out. Peet's command of comedy and drama are given a hell of a showcase here, and she and Shear are more than ably supported by Alessandro Nivola as Diane's husband, Dave, Judd Hirsch and Andrea Martin, love Andrea Martin, as David's parents, and Bob Balaban and Jessica Harper as Diane's parents. You also get Zosia Mamet, you know, playwright David Mamet's kid, and Holland Taylor in cameos. When a movie is written, directed, and starring a relative unknown, and it's this good, the idea of labeling it a vanity project is ill-considered. I mean, I choose to laud it as a sterling debut. I really, really enjoyed Fantasy Life, which is in select theaters, including in New York and L.A. Okay, let's do a little catch-up. Taking its cue from the school shootings that roil America, from gun culture, toxic masculinity, emo influencers trolling for attention online, and good old-fashioned class war, our hero Balthazar is a willfully dismaying and flagrantly inflammatory and thoroughly
timely mix of drama, social commentary, and dark humor that lands very strong thanks to young lead actors and solid supporting players. Its principal characters are Balthazar, a twisted, over-medicated rich kid from Manhattan. There seems to be a thread here. And Solomon, a downtrodden older boy stuck living with his grandma in a Texas trailer park. These guys are kind of tragic. They're hard to like. They're prone to evoke pity as well as concern for their well-being and for those around them. You know, they can come off as obnoxious and just plain noxious. Balthazar, the wealthy teen from New York, wants to impress an earnest anti-gun lobbying girl who attends the same prep school, but she thinks he's a creep, so he reaches out online to the frustrated Solomon, who seems to be planning a mass shooting. Balthazar thinks that if he stops the killings, the girl at school will go out with him. So Balthazar is played to a skin-crawling fare-thee-well by newcomer Jaden Martell, who kind of could pass for a Culkin brother. And Solomon is played by the better-known actor Asa Butterfield of TV's Sex Education, although with the blonde hair, glasses, and facial fuzz, he doesn't look much like any of his previous roles. Solomon's ne'er-do-well pyramid-scheming father is played in perfectly off-putting style by veteran character actor Chris Bauer. And Balthazar's politically connected fundraiser mom is played by Jennifer Ale. Our hero Balthazar's director and co-screenwriter Oscar Boysen, he knew what the assignment would be, and he kind of aced it. It's open in New York this weekend. I mean, it's been around for about a week, I think, in the New York area, and it's in L.A. as of today, and it will roll out to other select cities. Let's wrap things up with Forbidden Fruits. It's a light horror comedy. Three sleek, shallow fashionistas named Apple, Cherry, and Fig comprise the smug sales force at a high-end boutique in a Texas mall, but they decide to invite a fourth chica, conveniently named Pumpkin, to join the staff, and they enlist her to be part of their curse-casting after-hours witches coven. And true to their names and to the movie's title, they are enticing. They're also ostensibly wary of the male oppressor, and also they're opposed to any female who would question their lifestyle choices, such as one former employee. Unbeknownst to the other girls, including the domineering ringleader, Apple, Pumpkin has an agenda. Needless to say, Forbidden Fruit is ripe with subtext. It also has echoes of Mean Girls, The Craft, and Heathers, to name a few previous films that this recalls in spots. It's co-written and directed by Meredith Alloway. And the message is kind of sisterhood is powerful, or it can fall victim to jealousy, competitiveness, backbiting, manipulation. I give cheers to the main quartet of actresses led by Lily Reinhart, who was the wholesome blonde Betty Cooper on the Archie Comics live-action teen show Riverdale. And here she's a kind of a nasty red-haired vixen, and she sells the role like crazy. Speaking of crazy, things seem almost conventional at first, but by the third act, Forbidden Fruit gets its freak on at the mall in shocking fashion. Considering how female-forward and girl-power-oriented this is, I wasn't surprised to see that filmmaker Diablo Cody produced, but man, this is a better ride than most of Cody's output since she did Juno. Forbidden Fruit is in theaters. I want to just quickly mention something that's only available on streaming. It's it's kind of an action comedy crime sci-fi remix called Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice. Yeah. Time travel crime comedy with Vince Vaughn and James Marsden as two gangsters partnered in the mob. And they're also in a romantic triangle with the Vaughn character's hot wife, who was played by Isa Gonzalez. There's a lot of high concept here, like maybe somebody was high when they came up with it, but the cast is gung-ho and the action and humor land much more than they should. And Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice is way more entertaining than it has any right to be. It's kind of a genial, violent throwaway to be watched on the couch or in bed on a weekend night when you can't or won't deal with the nightlife frenzy. Essentially, Vaughn's character uses a time machine and goes back to just when he was going to get the Marsden character killed. I dug it, and it's only available on Hulu, Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice. What are you watching, Bennett?
Well, you know, sometimes as things happen, things come on and they're so lauded and everything like that, that you just want to avoid them for a while. And you don't watch it. And so what we did about a week ago is Marjorie and I started watching The Pitt. And I got to tell you, we were missing out on a lot. Although if you don't watch it till it's over for a season, you can binge watch it, which makes it a lot more palatable because it's 12 hours in the day of, or actually more like 14 hours of a time in an emergency ward, and it is incredible. It may be the best doctor show ever done on TV. It is just, I can't tell you how good it is, you know.
The Noah Wiley thing, right?
You know, Wiley, yeah. And it won an Emmy for best drama, won for best actor, for best supporting actress. I mean, this thing is just very special, and it's really good.
Yeah. So it's basically each season so far is one full day in the emergency room.
Not a full day, their shift. Okay, which is about 14 hours, you know.
Wow. Okay, so that's a concept that goes beyond the usual medical procedural.
Yeah, and it's so well done. I was amazed. I looked at Marjorie and said, how do we miss this one, you know?
What's the platform? What streaming service?
It's on HBO Max. Yeah. And it's been renewed, obviously, for another season, so you don't have to worry about it. But, I mean, it's just great. It's a great show.
The less time I spend with doctors and lawyers, the more I like it. So I do tend to avoid those shows, but I've heard nothing but good things, too. And maybe I will do what you did after eschewing it for a while. Maybe I'll jump on board The Pitt.
Yeah, we're all up to date on it, and it's got three more episodes this season. So, and it's a long season, too. They do like 14, 15 episodes, so as opposed to the normal, you know, 8 that they're doing now.
Right, I hear you.
But it's really, really good. It's the best doctor drama I've seen on TV in my life, okay?
And sure.
I've gone through them all, you know, so anyway.
Well, that sounds good. I'm very deep into Daredevil Born Again season 2. I wrapped up Paradise second season, not quite as good as the first season.
I think this season was better than last season.
It was all over the map. I mean,
no, it wasn't all over the map for about
travels, you leave the Paradise set, you know, setting, but there's a lot of Odyssey.
Don't believe him, folks. It's better this year than it was last year.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I really have enjoyed the show, and I'm looking forward to series 3.
But you said it wasn't as good as last year, and I have to just absolutely disagree with you, because many times I looked at Marjorie and went, boy, this is a better show than it was last year.
Well, you know, we'll disagree. I didn't dislike it. I just didn't think... Yeah, I thought it asked a lot of the audience this year. But
don't believe him, folks. Don't believe him. Watch it.
I'm also enjoying the hell out of Monarch Legacy of Monsters season 2. It's all season 2, you know. Daredevil, Paradise, and
The Pit.
Also Monarch. That's it. That's it, buddy.
The Pit's number 2 is in second season 2 as well. So, anyway.
Which one? I'm sorry.
The Pit is in its second season. Anyway, tell them where they can find your stuff.
I am on X, or Twitter, if you will, at Culture Blaster, and also at Mike the Knife 123 on Instagram. I'm in The Voice of San Francisco at thevoicesf.org, and here on GabNet with Alex Bennett.
Which there's more of coming right up.